I don't know, actually. I have never asked. Oh, what the hey? I dialed. Madame Mitchell answered with her most nasally accent.
Bonjour?
Hi, it's Colette, I said. Can I skip dinner at the hotel and eat with Jules?
Oh, well.
She paused for a few seconds to think.
All right. Try to be back by 8:30. Come by my room and check in so I don't have to send out les gendarmes, okay?
I said goodbye and handed the phone back to Jules. Now, where's this magic restaurant that serves people with no money? Chapter 9. Salut, Jules called, pushing open the door. Instantly, a rich, spicy aroma wafted out into the hallway. The restaurant that serves broke foreigners? Jules' family's apartment.
Salut, Jules,
called a voice that was young, sweet, and female. Jules ushered me inside. I looked around the small living room, which was decorated with nice, but older, furniture, a lot of plants, and dozens of framed photographs of family members. A girl who looked a little older than Jules stuck her head out from a doorway. She had a mop of short brown hair and round, wire-framed glasses. Over her clothes, she wore a floral apron, soft and faded from years of use, and in her hand was a wooden spoon.
Ah, she said, and then she started speaking French at me.
Non, elle ne parlait pas bien français, Jules said.
Oh,
the girl said.
Hello.
She thought you were French,
Jules said in a stage whisper.
Good job, you fooled another one.
I elbowed him in the side.
Bonsoir,
I said, not sure if I should try to shake hands or what.
Colette Isselin, this is my sister, Mathilde. Mathilde, this is Colette. She's visiting from America.
Mathilde's eyes lit up, and she grinned.
Sois sage, Jules said, a warning in his voice, and his sister's eyes seemed to flicker with mischief.
Nice to meet you, I said.
Here, would you like to set your things down?
Jules asked, directing me to the piano bench before she could say anything else. Mathilde disappeared back into the kitchen.
It smells amazing, I said. She is a genius at cooking, Jules said. She's training to be a chef.
What are you making tonight, sister?
Pot-au-feu,
she called.
And there is enough to share with La Joie Americaine.
Jules made a clucking sound, and was I imagining it, or did he actually blush? What is pot-au-feu? I asked. Not that I'm picky. I'll eat anything.
It's a beef stew, Jules said. Very traditional. Would you like some water?
Sure, I said. And he went into the kitchen. I heard him talking in hushed, urgent French to his sister, who laughed a little as she answered him back. When he reappeared with a glass of water, he looked even more flustered. So, your whole family lives here? I looked around. I hoped my voice didn't convey the surprise I felt. The apartment was tiny.
Yes, and this is where my father grew up, Jules said. His parents moved out to the suburbs when my mother and father were married.
Are you going to live here the whole time you're in college? I asked. He shrugged.
I don't see why not.
I thought of all the kids I knew, who were champing at the bit to leave their parents behind and go away to school.
Want a tour? Jules asked me.
Aren't you tired of giving tours? I said.
This will be a short one.
He led me down a short hall.
My parents' room, Mathilde's room, my room, the toilette.
He went so fast I didn't really have time to get a good look at anything. So after nodding at the bathroom, I turned back and gave the door to his bedroom a light push. There was a twin bed pushed up against one wall, a dresser next to the bed, and a desk by the door. The walls were covered in posters of bands: Radiohead, The Pixies, The Beatles, Metallica.
You like a lot of different music, I said.
What?
He grinned.
You think French people only like jazz and accordions?
Pilar can play the accordion, I said. It's pretty amazing. She can basically play anything.
Really? Pilar? He said. I would not have guessed she had any hidden talent.
She's just insecure, I said. Her mom has always made her feel short and fat.
That is a shame, he said.
Yes, it is, I said, turning to look over his bookshelves. Most of the titles were in French. A lot of them were classics, and the whole bottom shelf was textbooks. There was no TV in the room, just a set of small iPod speakers.
Very nice, I said.
Is it like American boys' bedrooms?
I turned to see that his grin had turned impish.
I wouldn't really know, I said airily. I don't make a habit of visiting boys' bedrooms.
Don't you have a brother? He asked.
Oh, yes. It's sort of like his room, only he has a giant computer and a bunch of chessboards.
It was actually smaller than Charlie's room, I noticed, and Jules seemed to have spent his whole life living there without being traumatized by the lack of square footage. We went back out, and Jules showed me the kitchen. Mathilde stood over her pot on the stove like a mother duck over her ducklings. Jules and I sat at the dinner table and watched her cook.
Colette, you like Paris? Mathilde asked.
Yes, I said. I love it.
What is your favorite part so far?
Versailles. It was true, in spite of the strange things that had happened to me there. People still like roses even though they have thorns, right? So I could still like the palace even though it was potentially full of ghosts. But today was nice, too.
Where did you go today?
Without meaning to, I looked at Jules. He gave me a shy smile and tried to sound casual as he said,
We walked around.
Mathilde didn't miss a chance to shoot him a sparkling look.
Alone? Just the two of you?
Hey, Jules said.
Occupe-toi de tes oignons.
What does that mean? I asked.
He told me to mind my onions.
Mathilde tried to hide her smile as she went back to stirring.
All right, I will stop asking questions.
I thought it was totally funny and sweet, the way she teased him. I never joked with Charlie that way, as if we were friends on the same level. Furthermore, she was actually interested in what Jules did, and he was clearly proud of her cooking. What were my brother and I doing wrong? A few minutes later, their parents came home, and then we all sat around and talked until it was time to eat. Monsieur Martin's English was terrible, but he loved testing it out on me, and I tried to answer in French. By the time he and I limped through an entire conversation, Mathilde and Jules were crying with laughter. The food was served on mismatched plates, all different brands and patterns that somehow looked like they were created to be mixed together. Along with the stew, there were green beans and steaming red beets. I was aware that everyone was waiting for my reaction, so I was determined to fake it if necessary. It wasn't necessary.
Mon Dieu, I said after taking my first bite.
She says, oh my god,
Monsieur Martin crowed delighted.
It's good?
Mathilde asked. It's unbelievable, I said, finishing the bite. The meat, salty and tender, broke apart in my mouth, and the broth was sweet and fragrant. I could have eaten a bucketful. Mathilde rewarded me with a smile, and then everyone stopped staring at me and turned to their own dinners. Monsieur Martin had brought home a crusty baguette wrapped in wax paper, and we each got a hunk of bread to dip into the broth. Madame Martin took a bite of hers and then closed her eyes with a happy sigh.
She has only 20 years, but she cooks like my grandmother.
Jules smiled at his sister, who smiled back at him, beaming with pride. It was such a warm, personal moment that I almost felt embarrassed having seen it. The whole meal took about an hour and a half, with everyone talking and laughing and taking their time, lingering over a platter of cheese and then cups of coffee. Even back in the days when my family ate dinner together, at Mom's insistence, we'd never been like this. It was always Dad hurrying to finish so he could go check his work email, and Charlie trying to catch glimpses of the TV in the next room, and me with my earbuds in, making a point of ignoring everything. We'd say grace, scarf down our food, and be out of there in 20 minutes. None of the Martins seemed to want to be anywhere else or doing anything else besides just sitting around with one another and hanging out.
So, what else do you have planned for the week? Mathilde asked,
pouring cream into her second cup of coffee.
Whatever Jules has planned, I said, and then I blushed. I mean, because he's the tour guide.
Jules was smiling at his plate.
Museums, historical sites, the usual.
Oh, there is one cool thing, I said, remembering. My friend Hannah got some of us invited to a party at Versailles next Saturday. Jules turned to me.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, we have to go rent costumes and everything. Although where I'd get the money to rent one, I had no idea. Mathilde brightened.
I know where you can find a dress. My school did an exhibition last year, and the costumes are in storage.
Oh, thanks, I said. I'm not sure. Can I let you know?
Of course, Mathilde said. How fun! A costume ball. Do you need a date?
Jules shot out of his chair.
I'm getting more coffee. Does anyone want anything?
Mathilde grinned.
All right, we can talk about something else.
By the time the meal was done, I was strangely, achingly homesick for my mother and brother.
We'd better get going, Jules said to me
after we'd carried our dishes into the kitchen and handed them to Monsieur Martin, who stood at the sink wearing Mathilde's floral apron over his work clothes. I thanked them all for their hospitality, noting the glint in Mathilde's eye as she told me to come back any time. When the apartment door clicked closed behind us, it felt like we were leaving some special, enchanted place. Your family's great, I said.
Yes, he said. Though Mathilde can be...
He said some French word I didn't understand, but it made me laugh. It's just cool that you guys are friends, I said. My brother and I are never like that. If we're talking, we're fighting. Jules pursed his lips and opened the main door for me. We stepped out into the twilight.
You must talk about the wrong subjects.
I guess so, I said. But it's more than that. It's like we're so different that one of us has to be wrong. About what? About everything. We don't like each other's friends, or music, or ideas about what's a worthwhile way to spend time. And it suddenly seems so silly. Why couldn't we both be right?
I'm sorry for you, Jules said. My sister is my best friend. We fight sometimes, but I don't know what I would do without her.
We walked for a while without speaking, just soaking in the sights and sounds of the night. The cafes were setting up their heaters, and dinner patrons were beginning to crowd the small tables. Golden light poured out of shop windows, and a mix of French voices floated on the cool air, rising and lowering in lively conversation. I didn't really let myself think about Jules, about the fact that he'd voluntarily spent his whole day with me and taken me home to dinner, and that his sister had teased him about me. I did take his words from earlier. You're a good person. And let them tumble around in my head like rocks being pushed along the floor of a river until they were smooth and shining. But the rest of it, and what it might mean, I pushed to the far reaches of my mind. Instead, I focused on the glow of the street lamps, accenting each cobblestone with its own little half moon of light. In what seemed like a tenth of the time I expected it to take, we were back at the hotel. I took a deep breath and turned to face Jules.
I'll see you in the morning then?
He asked. Of course, I said. And then there was a pause. One of those really, really long pauses where both people feel like there's something to say, only neither of them is willing to be the one to say it. What was it I wanted to say to Jules? What would I say if I weren't afraid? Thanks for listening to my secrets, or thanks for making me feel... How exactly did he make me feel? Like a whole person. A person who didn't need to change anything about herself to be okay. Essentially, the opposite of how I felt 99% of the time. But would I ever say that? Not in a million years. Thanks for dinner. I burst the bubble of silence before it turned into something dangerous. See you tomorrow. I pivoted and started to head into the hotel, feeling proud of myself for getting us onto safe ground. But Jules stopped me.
Colette? He said.
I hesitated before I swung back to look at him. He was smiling.
I had a very good time with you today.
Okay, I smiled back, and then I went inside. Okay? Is that really what I just said? I took the stairs to the third floor and knocked on Madame Mitchell's door. She pulled it open and checked her watch. 3 minutes early.
How was dinner?
Great, I said. Authentic French cuisine.
I must say,
she said, raising her eyebrows a little.
I don't know that I've ever had a girl in my group get along so well with a tour guide. Of course, for the past 6 years we had Monsieur Delacourt, and you'd have to be not only blind, but also pretty much out of your mind to find him attractive.
I wasn't sure whether to blush or laugh. Anyway, thanks for trusting me.
Oh, I wasn't worried, she said, waving her hand. I know he's not your type. Besides, I'm sure your friends don't approve, so it's not an issue.
As I climbed up to the suite, I couldn't get her comment out of my head. She hadn't said it in a mean way, or as if she were trying to call attention to some giant flaw. She'd said it like it wasn't a big deal at all, as if everyone in the world knew I didn't take a single step without the approval of Hannah and Pilar. Well, do you? I didn't have time to answer the question
or even think about it, before I opened the door to the room.
There you are, Pilar said.
Where have you been? Hannah demanded. I took a second to hang my bag in the closet before I faced them. Hi, I said.
Seriously, Hannah said.
I was out.
With?
What would happen if I said, mind your onions? I didn't dare find out. With Jewel, I said, and Audrey.
I threw the Audrey thing in because I didn't want them spending too much time thinking, or asking, about what Jewel and I did all day by ourselves. It was a calculated risk, and it seemed to work.
Ugh. Really? Why?
Hannah looked up at me, a cross expression on her face. But then she started telling me about a store she and Pilar had found that sold both brands of jeans she'd been hoping to buy, and I knew I was off the hook.
Chapter 10. And look over here, Hannah said. Another dead person. What a shock. I cringed. Hannah was in rare form that morning. Even Peely had tried to shush her once. We were in a church, after all. And was rewarded with a look that might as well have been a slap. So now neither of us said anything. We were at the Basilique de Saint-Denis, where the kings and queens of France were buried. I was glad it was on our itinerary. As time passed since our day at Versailles, the rational part of my brain began to get the upper hand, insisting, to my relief, that I hadn't really seen a ghost. Getting a look at the final burial site of Marie Antoinette and her husband seemed like a good way to reinforce that. Once I could assure myself that the queen was safely stowed away in a massive stone casket, I'd stop thinking she was following me around. All the remains were in giant marble boxes, like above-ground coffins, and atop each one was a lid that had a sculpture of the occupant in a state of eternal rest, lying down, hands pressed together in prayer. It was amazing how different they all were, and how well-preserved, even though some of them were about 800 years old. At the feet of most of the men were lions, and at the feet of the women were dogs. Many of the dogs were sleeping. Some were holding the women's robes in their mouths. One had even caught a rabbit. Considering how morbid the whole place was, they were pretty adorable. Finally, we came upon the memorial for Marie Antoinette and Louis XVI. As I looked up at the sculptures of the late king and queen, instead of the sense of reassurance I'd been hoping for, I immediately felt ill at ease, like there was a trickle of freezing water running down my spine.
This is different, Pilar said in a hushed voice. They don't look peaceful.
They just look
sad.
All of the other memorials featured people in peaceful repose. Marie and Louis, on the other hand, were depicted kneeling at prayer benches, looking the opposite of restful. Louis was praying, and he looked sort of resigned. Marie clutched her chest, staring down at the floor like her heart was breaking. The carvings were amazingly elaborate, with intricately draped fabric and royal crests made of stone. Bryn gazed up at them.
Why don't they get to lie down?
A good question, Jules said.
He spoke loudly enough for the whole group to hear, but still in a tone that had a hush to it.
This memorial was constructed in 1830. It contains only the partial remains of the king and queen, so they are not technically at rest here. Also, their positions represent the tragic circumstances of their deaths.
They are not technically at rest here? My stomach tightened. I turned away.
Around the corner, Jules was saying,
you will find the mummified heart of Louis XVII, the son of Mary and Louis, who died in captivity at the age of 10 during the Revolution. His heart was preserved after his death, which was typical for the hearts of royalty, and confirmed to be legitimate by DNA testing in the year 2000.
Now, that actually sounds interesting, Hannah said. Mummified heart? No thanks. I was already having stress-induced hallucinations of a ghost in a ball gown. Seeing the shriveled heart of a 10-year-old boy wouldn't exactly nurture the cool, collected state of mind I was struggling to regain. I started to walk away. But then I got the feeling that someone was following me.
Oh God, please don't let it be the ghost.
Bracing myself, I spun around, my eyes wide and unblinking.
Bonjour,
Jules said, looking startled.
You all right?
I took a second to calm myself before I spoke. I'm okay, just thinking about Marie and Louis.
You don't want to see the hat?
No, I said quickly. I really don't. Their tomb is bad enough.
You know, it may not even be their actual tomb. There's a lot of controversy based on the fact that they were originally buried somewhere else, in the Madeleine Cemetery.
Oh, I said. But then they were exhumed and brought here?
Well, he said, that is what some people say.
My spine tingled. It's not true?
The problem is, when they removed the bodies, Marie was identified only by this bone, le maxillaire.
Jules ran his finger along his jawline.
Her jaw?
Oui, the jaw. By a man who had met her 20 years before.
That would be impossible, I said. Wouldn't it?
Maybe so, Jules said. It depends who you ask.
So she's still buried there? He shook his head.
Probably not. The bodies from the Madeleine Cemetery were moved to another cemetery, the Arensis.
So the queen's body could be at the other cemetery, and it could be some random person's bones in this vault?
Jules shrugged. Some people say the king and queen were buried in coffins, which made them easier to identify.
What do you think? He smiled.
I wasn't there. It has been an ongoing argument for many years.
Is the Arensis Cemetery one of the places we'll be going? Even if it were an unmarked mass grave, I could know that the queen had found some closure. The closure I'd been hoping to find at the Basilique.
I'm afraid that is not so easy either. The Arensis was closed after only a few years, and later most of the bodies there were taken to the catacombs.
This was getting ridiculous. Well, are we going to the catacombs?
Yes, on Thursday.
Jules looked at me out of the corner of his eye.
You are very interested in the queen.
Sort of, I said. But before you ask again, I really don't want to see the heart. He smiled.
I understand.
A shriek of laughter came from behind us, and we turned to see Pilar, pink-faced, darting away from Hannah.
How could you say that?
Pilar cried, her voice echoing off the stone walls around us. I winced.
I just think your mother would appreciate it, Hannah replied, in a voice that carried throughout the church. Since she loves you so much.
Gross, Pilar squealed.
No one's going to pickle my heart. They burst into laughter, drawing annoyed stares from other tourists. Jules sighed and walked over to them. He said something in a low voice, and immediately their grins disappeared. Pilar looked embarrassed, and Hannah looked like someone had told her that her diamond earrings were made out of plastic. They spied me and walked over, Hannah venting under her breath. I know it's a church, she seethed. Hello, I go to a Catholic school. I know how to act in a church. Clearly not, but... Pilar was glancing around, worried about who might be mad at her. Hannah noticed. You can relax, you know. Jules isn't God. He was right, though. I looked over Hannah's shoulder and saw that he'd wandered away from us. I didn't blame him. I kind of wished I could walk away, too. You don't really like him, do you, Colette? Hannah asked. He's such a dork. I don't know, Hannah, I said, feeling tired all of a sudden. Despite her insistence that there had been nothing wrong with her behavior, Hannah was much quieter for the rest of the visit, but she was quiet like a half-buried landmine. As we were leaving the Basilique du Saint-Denis, Hannah pulled me by the arm away from the group. We're not going with them. We're taking a taxi to a costume rental house to find something to wear to the party. I wanted to say goodbye to Jules, but Hannah insisted that we hurry or risk missing our appointment. The cab pulled to a stop outside of a warehouse-style shop for theatrical rentals. A sign on the door announced, Pas ouvert au public, which Hannah proudly translated as meaning, not open to regular people, as she rang the bell. Inside was a wonderland of clothes. I drifted down the aisles, studying the hundreds of costumes. There were soldiers' uniforms, 1960s go-go dancer outfits, and long, elaborate dresses that could be straight out of a movie about Paris 150 years ago. I slowly made my way over to Hannah and Pilar, who stood in front of a rack of ginormous ball gowns. Some were the flattened bell shape I'd seen on the ghost. I mean, on the woman. The completely alive, non-ghost woman. An attendant glanced at each of us and pulled dresses in various sizes, hanging them on a smaller, separate rack. She grabbed one of the gowns and gestured for Hannah to follow her behind a curtain into the changing room. Pilar and I waited on folding chairs and listened to Hannah's surprised exclamations of pain and discomfort. How much does this thing weigh? 100 pounds? She whined at one point. Then the curtain parted, and Hannah stood before us in a pale purple gown covered in clumps of pink ribbon flowers. Across the skirt were stripes of ivory lace, and the same lace flowed over the collar and poured from the sleeves. Voila, she said. What do you think? Wow, Pilar said. It certainly plays up, What she meant was that the top was very tight and very, encouraging. I know, right? Hannah said. That's what I like about it. Colette? It's pretty, I said. Hannah narrowed her eyes. But what I couldn't say was that it looked disturbingly like something you'd expect to see on Little Bo Peep. I think you should try the green one. Hannah turned imperiously to the attendant. Bring the green dress. The woman closed the curtain without a word. There followed more whining and little yelps, plus Hannah's sharp admonitions of, Be careful. The curtain opened once more. This gown was pale sage green,
edged in a metallic gold lace. The fabric draped heavily over its wide hips. The skirt was made up of dozens of gathered scallops, and the bodice was constructed of horizontal pleats that opened up to a gauzy explosion of gold tulle at the neckline. Every element of the dress was carried out with ruthless attention to detail. Each pleat, each drape of the heavy fabric, was precise and perfect. Hannah's pale green eyes shone as vibrantly as emeralds. "Colette?" she asked. The words just popped out of my mouth. "You look like an evil queen." Pilar gasped and shot me a scandalized look. I mean, I couldn't think of how to say what I meant, or what I would have meant if I hadn't just said exactly what I meant, which was that she did look like an evil queen. The kind who keeps a bucket of poisoned apples right next to her cursed spinning wheel. "Oh, I know what you mean." Hannah studied herself in the mirror, her lips pressed into a triumphant smile. "This is the one." The woman helped her change out of the dress, then hung it on a rack near the small office. "Pilar, your turn," Hannah said. A few minutes later, Pilar emerged through the parted curtains.
"Oh my God, I can't breathe."
"Wow, Peely," I said. She stopped short, mouth open.
"That's a good wow?"
"Yeah," I said. "Turn around." This dress was simpler than Hannah's. It had a smaller skirt, one that was just round instead of sticking out on the sides. But it looked like it had been made for Pilar. Its dark red satin brought out the warmth in her skin and made her black curls look dramatic, especially in contrast to the white satin ruffle that encased the square neckline. The same style of ruffle, tight and neat-looking, adorned the ends of the sleeves. The back of the gown was bustled, the red satin slightly gathered to reveal an underskirt of black lace. "It's perfect for you," I said. "It makes your waist look non-existent."
"Non-existent like a barrel?" Pilar asked.
"No, like a wasp," I said. Pilar grinned at her reflection. If Hannah was the evil queen, then Pilar looked like the sweet, charming fairy tale princess who the queen was determined to poison. And it almost seemed like that was the case. Hannah was the only person in the room not infected by Pilar's happy smile. "I don't know," Hannah said, shrugging. "It doesn't look very French." The attendant drew back, horrified.
"It is very French."
"Be reasonable," Hannah said. "I just don't think the color suits you." Peely glanced at her.
"But Colette likes it."
"Colette doesn't know everything about clothes," Hannah said, and I felt her glare out of the corner of my eye.
"Yes, she does," Pilar said, but she looked doubtful.
"There must be something better," Hannah said, pulling me to the rack. This was a test. Nothing would be better than the dress Pilar was wearing, and I wasn't going to outright lie and say so. I reached out and touched one that was a stiff, purpley mauve material covered in starched lace of the same color.
"This fabric is really cool," I said lamely.
Hannah grabbed that dress and handed it to the attendant. When the curtain opened, Pilar waited for our response. The dull purple of the dress had just enough gray in it that it didn't bring out any of the warm tones in her skin. In fact, it was another dress that would have looked fantastic on Hannah's cool pallor. But on Peely, it was nothing special.
"Great," Hannah said.
"I like the lace," Pilar said glumly. "Is it glued on?" The attendant sniffed, but didn't condescend to answer. I'm tired, Peely said. I guess I'll take this one.
Perfect, Hannah said. Now Colette's turn.
As Pilar changed in silence, I went over to the rack to look at the other dresses. There was a teal one with a fitted jacket-style bodice. I had a sense it would look good on me. Too good for Hannah's taste. And passed over it, reaching for a dusty tan gown that would completely wash out my complexion. But the attendant pushed in front of me, grabbed the teal one, and pulled me into the changing area. Getting dressed was a squinchy, pinchy process, but I tried not to complain. After she'd buttoned the jacket, the woman looked at me, her eyes shining. Before I could step through the curtain, she grabbed me by the shoulders and aimed me at the mirror.
C'est parfait,
she whispered, pulling my medallion out and settling it over the crisp neckline. It was perfect. The jacket hugged my rib cage and cut in sharply at the waist, flaring in a short peplum over the top of the skirt. The color, like the ocean on a sunny day, made my skin look as radiant and luminous as the portrait of the Duke at the Louvre. I almost didn't recognize myself. Hannah's and Pilar's dresses, however pretty they were, still looked like costumes. But I looked like a girl who'd woken up in 1785 and put on her traveling outfit. For a moment, I had the same disoriented feeling I'd experienced in the mirrored room at Versailles, like my eyes couldn't quite focus on my own face. And when they finally managed to, somehow, it wasn't my face I was seeing. Once again, my eyes were wider, and my lips were fuller, and my hair was piled up on my head in an elaborate updo. I reached my arm out to lean against the wall, and the attendant took me by the elbow and swung me around. Suddenly, it was like the spell was broken. I could see again, and I could breathe again, but just barely. What was happening to me? Was I losing my mind? Who was the woman I'd seen in the mirror, the woman whose face was so similar to my own? I didn't have time to think. The attendant pulled the curtain back, revealing me to my friends.
I don't like it, Hannah said immediately.
The attendant sucked in an annoyed breath. Pilar was silent for a moment. Could you turn around? I turned to let them see the back, which was just as perfect as the front, I knew. Out of curiosity, I glanced at the tag hanging off the sleeve. 249 euros, semen, plus 100 nettoyage, it read. There was no way on earth I could afford to pay 249 euros, plus another 100 for whatever nettoyage was. My dress for the winter formal at school had cost $9 at a brown bag sale at the Women's League thrift store. The most expensive item of clothing I'd bought in almost a year was a shirt I got for $19 on clearance at the mall. Too shocked to speak, I turned back to Hannah, trying to think of a way to get out of this.
There must be something better, she said. How about that beige one?
That was too much for the attendant.
Actually, I'm so sorry. We are closing.
We all turned to look at her. She didn't look sorry, for the record. Hannah scowled.
It's just one more dress.
The girl shrugged, palms up.
No time.
Hello? We're wearing these to Versailles, Hannah said. Colette's supposed to go naked?
The woman blinked. I don't think she knew what the word naked meant. I touched Hannah's arm.
Maybe I can come back. It's not a big deal.
It's a huge deal, Hannah said hotly. You can't just show up to an embassy party in a burlap sack. Bristling, I wanted to tell her I wasn't in the habit of showing up anywhere in a burlap sack. But I swallowed the words and cast an apologetic look at the attendant. I'll figure something out. I saw in her eyes that we were united in our disdain for Hannah's hissy fit.
If you call, you can make an appointment for Wednesday or Thursday.
See? I said. I'll come back. It didn't save me from paying 350 euros, but it bought me a little time. Suddenly, I remembered Mathilde's offer of a dress, and I felt a wave of relief. Maybe I could ask Jules tomorrow. Hannah pulled out her well-worn Amex and paid for her own gown. As she folded the receipt and slipped it into her red patent leather shoulder bag, she turned to me.
You know, you can be very passive sometimes. You really need to learn to stand up for yourself, Colette.
I was no expert on Parisian geography, but I knew the taxi was heading away from our hotel, not toward it. Not wanting to offend the driver, I leaned over and spoke quietly.
Hannah, do you know where we're going?
Her smile was as mysterious as the Mona Lisa's.
Oui, Colette, I know exactly where we're going.
But she wasn't going to share. All right, then. Finally, we pulled to a stop on a small side street. Hannah paid and then scrambled out as if her seat were on fire. This neighborhood was different from Saint-Germain. The boulevards and sidewalks were wider. The buildings were bigger, and the people walking by seemed like they were on their way to work rather than ambling around for the pleasure of it. Pilar and I followed Hannah warily as she led us down the street, looking at the addresses and names of the places we passed.
There,
she cried, catapulting across the road, dodging traffic. She was headed for a park that occupied a whole block. Pilar and I hung back until the traffic light changed, and then we went after her. A green metal fence surrounded the park, and in the center was a dome structure that looked like a small museum or church. There was a playground and some benches and a big old tree stump, but still nothing that would indicate why we'd come there. As Hannah looked at me, her face lit up, and then someone's hands were over my eyes.
Guess who?
I was momentarily flustered by the sound of Armand's voice, and even more flustered when he took his hands away and I found myself on the receiving end of Hannah's most toxic glare. But before Armand could see, her expression changed into one that was sweet and charming.
Bonjour,
she said, positioning herself between us. He kissed her knuckles, and she was instantly under his spell.
Hey, Armand, Pilar said, sounding slightly bored.
Bonjour, Pilar, he said,
and then turning to me.
Bonjour, Colette.
Those liquid gold eyes flashed. I gave him a curt nod and turned to Peely. Want to walk around? While Hannah and Armand wandered off, hands lightly linked, Peely and I went up to the big structure. Up close, it resembled a medieval monastery with a long center corridor bordered by stone arches. The front had a big paragraph of French writing on it.
La Chapelle Expiatoire,
Pilar read.
Chapel of... Expiatoire means atonement, Pilar said.
Then, seeing my face, she gave a good-natured huff.
Don't look so surprised, please. We played Sauget's Symphonie Expiatoire at music camp last year, but that was about World War II. This is way older than that.
We studied the plaque and tried to work out what it said. The words I could understand seemed to suggest that this had been a burial place. But then it said something about transférer to Saint-Denis. When I saw the words Marie Antoinette, my heart jumped. I stumbled backward. Wait, was this the Madeleine Cemetery that Jules had mentioned? I let out a long exhale, and my breath came out in a tiny cloud of fog. I suddenly wished I was back at the hotel with the rest of our group. Anywhere, actually, but right there. "Can we go sit down?" I asked, my voice rising. Pilar shrugged and followed me toward a metal bench near the exit. "Do you think the lovebirds will be back soon? What's Hannah expecting from Armand?" I asked. "Does she think he's really serious?"
"He seems pretty serious to me," Pilar said. "And Hannah's never been more serious about anything in her life." I didn't want to come out and say that I thought Armand was just toying with her. "But we're here for only a week." Peely shrugged. "Hannah could easily talk her parents into sending her to a boarding school in Paris." Hannah was one of the smartest people I knew. Would she really throw her life into total turmoil for a boy who'd whispered sweet nothings to her a few times?
"I've been meaning to tell you," Pilar faltered. "I saw you and Armand the other night."
"That wasn't what it looked like," I said.
"Colette, I might be sort of dumb, but I'm not blind, okay? I can see what goes on in front of my face, and I'm just saying, be careful." I thought about telling her she wasn't dumb, but that seemed beside the point.
"I know. I'm not looking to make Hannah angry."
Pilar's eyebrows went up. "Angry wouldn't even begin to cover it. If Hannah thinks you're trying to move in on him, you'll be the one looking for boarding schools 5,000 miles away." The air was quiet around us, except for the sounds of cars driving by on the roads that bordered the park. "Hannah's my friend," I said at last. "I would never do anything to hurt her, and I'm sure she feels the same way about me." Pilar tried to turn away before her face betrayed her thoughts, but I caught the way her lips flattened into a hard, doubtful line. We both knew what she was thinking, that Hannah would hurt me in a heartbeat if it came down to it, especially if it had anything to do with Armand. After a little while, Hannah and Armand appeared. Their hands were clasped, and he looked smug. Hannah was practically skipping.
"Ready to go?"
she asked. We found a taxi stand, and Armand pointed out his apartment. It had windows looking over the park. When a cab stopped for us, Hannah and Pilar climbed in.
"Oh, Colette," Armand said. "One moment, s'il vous plaît."
We all stared at him.
"Come here," he said.
I didn't want to go, but it was like an order. I slowly walked over to him. He smiled down at me. "You're going to get me in trouble," I said, my voice low.
"Don't worry about Hannah."
His white teeth looked almost blue in the cool light.
"I spent a whole hour talking to her just so I could spend 1 minute with you."
My heart was racing.
"Why would you say that?"
I asked, not daring to glance back at the taxi.
"I don't understand what you're doing. Why do you think I'm special?"
Despite the cold, the gleam in his eye made me feel like I was on fire.
"Because of Leclerc."
"Leclerc?" I asked. "Who's that?"
"Colette!"
Hannah's voice was cold and rigid. "The meter's running!" I turned back to Armand. I'm going now.
You and I will have a chance to talk soon.
I doubt it, I said, already stressed about Hannah. Colette, we're going to leave without you, she snapped.
You should go.
Armand reached over to straighten the collar of my jacket, and I yanked away. His laugh roared behind me as I hurried to the waiting taxi and climbed in.
Au revoir, mademoiselle, he called.
Hannah stared icily at the back of the seat in front of her. What did he want? Pilar asked. My mind raced for something, anything, that would explain Armand's actions.
Yes, Colette, tell us, Hannah said through her teeth. What did he want?
It's a surprise, I said. I can't tell you. She narrowed her eyes. All right, fine, I said. He wanted to know what size you wear, for a present. That threw her off. She sat back, trying to look angry but unable to conceal her curiosity.
What do you think he's going to get me?
I told you, I said. It's supposed to be a surprise. I've already said too much.
All right, she said reluctantly. Wait, did you tell him size 2 or 0?
0, I said.
Okay.
She looked relieved, but not as relieved as I felt that she'd bought my lie. Chapter 11. We ate dinner with the rest of the group at the hotel cafe. Hannah treated me exactly like usual. At least, that was what I tried to tell myself. Afterward, she and Pilar got into the elevator, and I hung back, trying to think of an excuse to take the stairs.
Hey, Colette, hang on.
I turned to see Audrey and Bryn coming up behind me.
Oops, sorry,
Hannah said, letting the elevator doors slide shut. Hi, I said, hoping they hadn't noticed Hannah would have had plenty of time to hold the elevator.
Are you busy tomorrow morning?
Audrey asked. Just with whatever's on the itinerary.